Hello everyone, welcome to LEC, to the 2018 edition, I guess. We're going to start with a presentation by Artem Popov about signal processing and sound synthesis. The presentation talk title being Using Perlin Noise in Sound Synthesis. So,
thanks. Yeah, hello everybody. I'm Artem Popov, and I'd like to talk about using Perlin Noise for making sounds. We'll have a look at the Perlin Noise algorithm and its successor called Simplex Noise. We'll see how Perlin Noise can be saturated, modulated, and also have a look at a plugin that is built using Perlin Noise. What is Perlin Noise actually? It's all of this, in fact. It's an algorithm very widely used in computer graphics for making, you know, all kinds of images like these two in the top. It's used to produce cloud-like textures, but also marble, wood, basically everything in between. Another popular usage of Perlin Noise is elevation models, so pretty much every terrain generator you find out there is using Perlin Noise in one way or another to make these height maps used to render this, fractal landscapes and such. And as well, standalone works of art like this last image. It's actually got an animated version. Look it up, it's beautiful, mesmerizing. It was originally discovered by Ken Perlin for special effects for movie Tron. And I believe Mr. Perlin got an Oscar for that algorithm, but much later they've got a nomination like Technical Achievement or something. So it's pretty old. Despite its age and popularity in the world of computer graphics, it has seldom been used in sound and music. In fact, I have found two implementations of Perlin Noise used in synthesis. The first one is Super Collider. They have got this Perlin 3 unit generator by Dan Starwell, which works by sampling a three-dimensional Perlin Noise function to produce these noise-like waveforms. And the second is Malaclips synthesizer module by Sonic Potions, which is actually using Perlin Noise for synthesis. It's still, I believe it's still in the prototyping stage, but they already have got some demonstration sounds, and this is generally like a very interesting company. They've got really interesting stuff like the Penrose quantizer, whatever that means. So, yeah, this one. And that's pretty much it. So Perlin Noise has also been used, you know, for stochastic melody generation, things like that, but not really like used for sound synthesis. So let's have a look at how this algorithm works. Is that actually visible? I believe, yeah, it should be. In order to fill this square with two-dimensional Perlin noise, we begin by creating four random vectors in the corners, which we call gradient vectors. In this case, they are just randomized, different Perlin noise implementations, they are typically randomized by a Hessian function of the corner coordinates. We choose a point in the square and draw another set of vectors towards it. So we have got four pairs of vectors here, originating from each of the corners. In the next step, we just calculate dot products of each pair of these vectors here, right? Then we just interpolate the four resulting values using this smoothing function below to get the value of noise in this point. Now if we kind of increase the frequency of this function, continue in the next cell and so on, we get these beautiful noise images. So to the left here, we've got frequency of 2, so it's just 2 by 2 squares, and the next image has got a frequency of 4. Simplex noise was also proposed by Ken Perlin as an improvement to the original Perlin noise algorithm. Since you know, Perlin noise is kind of computationally intensive, it requires many interpolation steps. In simplex noise, we also begin by with a set of random gradients in each of these corners, but we also subdivide this square into triangles. And in high dimensions, we will be choosing like the most basic shape for this dimension. So for 2 dimensions, the most primitive shape you can find on a plane is a triangle, right? And we also draw a set of vectors to the point from each of the corners of this triangle. Then we calculate the dot products of each pair as well. And then we just sum the resultant scalar products weighted by a squared distance to this point to get the value of noise. And if we increase the frequency here, we shall see that simplex noise produces kind of similar results, but also it's it looks kind of more jagged and less directional, perhaps. So yeah, we are talking about frequencies here, but what does this have to do with sound? Sound is a one-dimensional signal, right? So let's see how Perlin noise is built in one-dimensional space. Now, instead of vectors, we have these three red lines, the gradients, and it doesn't make much sense to use vectors here, right? So it's these lines are slopes, and their values are as well randomized before we begin producing noise. And for each point on this x-axis, we just interpolate between these the values of the slopes in this point using this smoothing function again. Notice that the dashed line here, where the noise is calculated, it is not exactly between these two red lines. So the smoothing function shifts, kind of shifts it to the bottom. And simplex noise is built in pretty much the same way. We just built these gradient slopes, and we sum them, the values from each corner using squared distance to the point, and it looks very similar to Perlin noise in one dimension, in fact, but sounds a bit different. So let's have a look at, and let's actually hear how this sounds. So here I have a Perlin noise function from 0 to 2, so we kind of have a symmetric shape to it, and we can loop this single cycle waveform to get a tone, and it will have the timbre or the texture built using Perlin noise. And yeah, we can randomize the set of gradients, so it would sound a bit different. If we switch to simplex noise, we shall see that it's got kind of smooth shape, and this has got some artifacts and also additional harmonics in the frequency spectrum. We can try comparing this. We've got a tone generator, which makes interesting sounds, in fact, but they are not very detailed yet. So to add detail to Perlin noise, there is, in fact, a pretty traditional technique called fractional Brownian motion. Also called fractal Brownian motion. And let's have a look at how it is produced in two dimensions again. I just find it kind of, you know, more graphical, to more illustrative to show this in two dimensions first. So if we make several versions of Berlin noise, which are called octaves, each one has progressively increasing frequency, and then we just sum them all together with decreasing the amplitude in also in regular steps, we'll get this very detailed image that we have in the end. We can have a look at how this would look in one dimension. So as we start adding octaves here, we are getting interesting harmonic content. And if we increase the amplitude of each successful octave, so we'll get this harsh and very digitally sounding, texture, which I kind of like because it sounds refreshing and really digital. And we can automate this to get, you know, this subtractive synthesizer-like behavior. So we can as well adjust these gradients to add variation to Berlin noise, right? So if we rotate these vectors a bit, we will get this waveform to change in a very subtle way. So you see the frequency spectrum is not changing really drastically unless there is this amplitude modulation in effect. And let's actually see how this will sound when we do this in real time, yeah. And if we add more octaves, sorry, we get this sound, which is kind of cool. I'm not sure if that's bright enough, but yeah, if we rotate the gradients in two-dimensional version of Berlin noise, we get this flame or flow-like imagery, which was actually proposed by Ken Perlin as a way to simulate advected flow in Perlin noise textures. Another technique that we can use to add variance to Berlin noise is called domain warping. And it's maybe a bit hard to explain, but if we take the amplitude of this function and just feed it back to a similar noise function, so we kind of take these values of noise here and just calculate noise again over the what we've got. And then if we add the coefficient to that and start increasing it slowly, we'll get this distortion that will basically sound like this as we modify this. And also note how the harmonic content changes. So this harmonics, the high harmonics start to increase in the amplitude, and the lower harmonics start to decrease. Yes, yeah, so let's also add a few octaves here. So that's how domain warping works. Okay, let's get back to this. All of these techniques I have implemented in this plugin. I'm not sure if it's visible enough. Yeah. So which I called Endos, and it, right now it's a very basic synthesizer which exposes all of the noise options that we have just looked at as automatable parameters. So it's got this domain warping. It can adjust the offset for the gradients, and we have controls for increasing octaves and persistence, which is the step at which we decrease the amplitude of each successful octave. Well, and just a simple volume envelope, so no modulation envelopes or anything like this yet. And it also, yeah, so has a way to randomize the set of gradients, and it can use Berlin noise or simplex noise. But in the end, I find simplex noise to be a bit better, you know. So if we compare these two sounds with zero, yeah, with just one octave, it's a bit cleaner, you know, still sounding very digital, but without this additional harmonic content in the bottom. And as you can see, it can be used to produce, you know, a useful range of sounds. So we can have like this string-like pads, and even something like this. So digitally sounding strings, right? As well as digital basses, or digital leads. So yeah, or even, you know, percussive sounds. In fact, you can write an entire track with it. I have heard a few tracks made entirely with this plugin, and I'd like to show you one of them. I think I should switch to this window first. So here we have drums, basses, pads, leads, everything made using this plugin in real time. And as you can see, it's also very light on the CPU. The challenges that arise when implementing a synthesizer using Berlin noise are on this slide. So and first one is predictable randomness. So let's have a look at the plugin again. When using such a synthesizer in a multitrack project, you want to make sure that next time you load your track, it will look the waveform will should look exactly like it was. So you know, so it doesn't break the mix. In Endos, I do this by calculating the entire set of gradient vectors for every possible octave in advance, and saving the random seed in the plugin preset. So as we try to randomize it, so this seed value will be saved with the preset, and by using a standard library random number generator, I'm making sure that this waveform will also remain the same when you load this preset on another operating system or architecture. So yeah, this one is actually pretty easy to deal with. Now, there is also output level normalization. And this one is not so easy, right? So if we start modulating this waveform, so we shall see that the amplitude of this waveform also changes with its texture, right? And in fact, normalization algorithm does not exist for Perlin noise, but I think that if we have the set of gradients before we start synthesizing this sound, we may try to predict the peak amplitude if we also know the number of octaves and the persistence coefficient. So there is some kind of nonlinear dependency in that. So if we try to write a function that will take the persistences and number of octaves as parameters, so it will look like an exponential function. So it probably can be implemented. And simplex noise is a good candidate for doing that because it has a well-defined analytical derivative. But so far, this has not been resolved. And finally, there is an issue with the waveforms being asymmetrical in some cases. So if we, again, reset this. So in this case, we have kind of smooth transition between two waveforms when we generate the tone. But if we try this now, we've got this distortion. Because notice that these two on the edges of this waveform, the direction of it is symmetrical now. So we've got this cusp corner between them, which adds this additional harmonics. So that that probably can be solved by making sure that the gradients on the edges of this function are symmetrical, at least in the first octave. And then as we start adding the octaves, we want distortion anyway. So this could probably be done using that. Or as well, you know, there is an option to have unit length waveforms. So we actually can try to, yeah, right here, we get the full waveform cycle in the first segment, so we can as well resort to that. Right. Finally, I have made all these images in Blender, and these are examples of what you can do with, you know, Perlin noise and various sister algorithms. So, for example, this image on the top is called cellular noise or Voronoi noise. And yeah, there are a lot of things you can do with that. For example, you can combine noise functions in various ways by feeding the input of them into each other to have effects like this. And this is, well, I find this very inspiring, you know, to explore at least, so because it's fun and refreshing, and it results in very weirdly sounding things. And it's also aesthetically kind of cool, because we are using graphics algorithms to synthesize sounds to make music. And that's also like very interesting, because we often talk about the texture of a sound, right? And Ken Perlin, in fact, when he described his algorithm, so he called the paper an image synthesizer. So perhaps there is a lot of common things between graphics and sound, and I think math is something that unites these two. So yeah, I find this a very interesting direction to explore. And hopefully you do, yeah. So that's all. Thank you. Any questions?
Okay, thank you for the presentation. We have some time for questions.
So you, this is like you always loop the waveforms that you get a tone out of it.
Yeah.
But what happens if you don't loop them? And in your song you showed us, there were also like hi-hats, which were like more noisy, not a tone. So how did you generate this?
Well, it's just a very short envelope. So let's, I'm not sure, let's try to make this right here. So first I will just decrease the volume a bit. So yeah, you just increase the number of octaves and it becomes noise.
And this is because of the like the Nyquist frequency, the is it really the, because it's not, it's still a periodic waveform, no? It's not noise.
Well, it's a waveform, but it approaches white noise in some ways, in some cases. If you have a very short envelope, yeah, it will sound like a hi-hat or like a kick drum if you know, keep it at this shape.
And what happens if you don't loop the waveform? If you like let the algorithm generate waveforms, like random waveforms?
You'll get a noise with some tone in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it will be sounding like noise with a frequency. And the Malaclip synthesizer, which I have showed on earlier in the presentation, it allows you to just, you know, produce your own noise. But I was trying, like here, I was trying to build a synthesizer that can, you know, be used in music. So it's something. Early noise is here just for building the texture of a tone.
One more quick question then.
I noticed that with some of the waveforms, where they're highly asymmetric, you're going to develop an effective DC offset. How do you handle that?
I actually stumbled upon high DC offset when I was using three-dimensional Perlin noise. So I had very raised edges on both sides of this waveform. That's why I actually started using one-dimensional noise. So in one-dimensional noise, you basically don't have to make sure that it will be zero on the boundaries of the gradients. So at point 0, 1, and 2, it will always have a value of 0. The DC offset will not build up, at least. I haven't had this problem when I began using one-dimensional noise.
Thanks, everyone, then. No more time for questions. And thank you to Artem Popkov for the presentation.
Thanks.